Hey, drama listeners, this is Dylan. We have a gag of a guest for you this week, Zoe Kazan, who you all know from the countless film and television projects she's been in, as well as currently starring in Doubt, a Parable, right now on Broadway. And we have so much fun with her. You know, it was obviously a little intimidating having a movie star, playwright, screenwriter, all of the above join us on the podcast. But she's one of the girls. Let's just say that. She is so much fun and wonderful. And I'm not going to tease it too much because you're going to have to just listen. But buckle in. It is a ride and it is so wonderful. Thank you, Zoe. If you love our episode today, please go ahead and give us a nice rating, a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen. And if you're feeling even more generous, maybe you could sign up for our Patreon. We call it Drama Plus. It is monthly bonus episodes, at least two a month, as well as access to our Instagram close friends, where we have some spicy and silly content all the time. And, you know, with the spring Broadway season being in full swing, now is the time to jump on board because we are getting into it all. All right, I've teased it enough. Enjoy our episode today with Zoe Kazan. Let's get on with the show.
Press play.
Curtain of an hour in.
It's time to take spin.
The shade and tea
to spill.
Ooh, drama.
Oh, that's a tweet.
Did they book?
Who got nom?
They option no.
Oh, I'm not well.
What star will we talk to today?
Oh, that's a gag, honey.
Say no more. Drama.
Drama.
Welcome to Drama, a podcast that covers theater,
pop culture,
love,
and life.
I am Connor McDowell.
And I am Dylan McDowell.
Dylan, I moments before I just hit record, I noticed I have five beverages on my desk.
What?
And I'm nervous I'm gonna have to go to the bathroom, but I know I have a coffee, a seltzer, a bottle of water, a protein shake that I've been nursing all day, and then I have like an extra can of LaCroix just in case. I know.
You're
I
so addicted to that stuff. I only have
I
two,
know.
so I guess I'm doing a little bit better. Wait, I need to hear all about your night because I know you're working
Yes.
on the Who's Tommy with your job
Yes.
at the advertising agency.
Have I said that on the pod before?
I don't think you've announced it yet. Not that it's anything that you've been so
Well,
excited to announce.
it's, I mean, Facebook status vibes.
Yeah.
I am so obsessed with this production. I didn't have a connection to Tommy really, but it's obviously a much loved album and show.
Yeah.
And it's not necessarily the type of show I would always be drawn to, but I'm obsessed with it, Dylan. The production is fantastic. The projections that they use, it's a nonstop, it's epic. I mean, I don't use that word lightly. It is truly epic. The story is darker than one would expect. So I really think you need to go into it knowing that, but
okay.
The music is great. The cast is phenomenal. I mean, I'm raving about this genuinely. Like it's genuinely so great and it's so fun to work on something that you think is great and it makes people so happy. And
you've had the string of like always working on great stuff though.
That's true for the most part. That's true. Yeah. I mean, like Kimberly Akimbo, people love,
yeah.
You know, that was special, but it's
now you
really
did
fun.
Say, you did say projections and those do make me wary in a Broadway show. I don't love projections, I must say.
I know, but they got it right.
Good.
This is, it doesn't cheapen the show at all. It's not like they didn't have money for a set. So they just projected stuff.
But sometimes I think projections are more expensive than a set, but I guess that's a whole other conversation.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I guess I assumed otherwise, but yeah, I can't wait for you to see it. The cast is amazing. Couple friends of the pod on it.
Yeah, Bobby Conti, Danny
Bobby
Quadrino.
Conti. Yes, oh my God. And Danny plays, I think, 60 different characters and is singing. Like, it's crazy. And Bobby's a star. I mean, they both are stars, but Bobby gets more of like, he has like a more of a character to play that
okay.
really it sticks out. Danny is like certainly a featured ensemblist that understands the assignment, but yeah, Dylan, you're gonna
it's
love
on
it.
My
wait.
It's on the top of my list for when I come and visit. And so is another show
I know you
that you got
you
to see
told
this
me
week.
Last night. Well, you weren't going to be able to see it because
it was limited.
You were coming after it was going to end, but it extended.
Thank goodness.
And
thank goodness.
Oh my God,
just
I
for
know.
Me.
Dylan, it's going to be a great show. I'm stoked about this guest. Would you please read the intro and
Absolutely.
We can get going.
Absolutely. Our guest today is currently starring in Roundabout Theater Company's revival of Doubt, a Parable, as Sister James. She is an exquisitely brilliant playwright, screenwriter, and star of countless theater, television, and film projects. You know her portrayal of Jodie Cantor in She Said, opposite Carrie Mulligan, as well as Emily in The Big Sick, opposite Kumail Nanjiani. Just a few fabulous film credits include The Ballad of Buster Scruggs, Revolutionary Road, It's Complicated, and Ruby Sparks, for which she received an Independent Spirit nomination. She also co-wrote and co-executive produced the film Wildlife with her partner, Paul Dano. On Broadway, she's appeared in the revival of William Ng's Come Back, Little Sheba, Martin McDonagh's A Behavior Handing in Spokane, and Chekhov's The Seagull, for which she received a Drama Desk nomination. Select off-Broadway appearances include The Prime of Miss Jean Brody opposite Cynthia Nixon, Angels in America Parts 1 and 2, and 100 Saints You Should Know, which garnered her a Clarence Derwent Award and Lucille Lortel and Drama Desk nods. On television, you've seen her in the HBO limited series The Plot Against America, Clickbait, and her Emmy-nominated turn in Olive Kittredge. As a playwright, four of her plays have been produced, including We Live Here and After the Blast. Are you gagged? Of course you are. Please welcome to drama, Zoe Kazan.
Hi. I was so self-conscious when you were reading my bio. I was like, oh, God, this is very long. I need to do less things. I need to rest more often.
You know what? Sometimes I think, should we just like include highlights? But then I'm like, no, because like if this is someone's introduction to someone, I want them to know.
Yeah, yeah. And now I'm like, do fewer things. I'm correcting my own grammar in my head. So sorry.
You're a true writer. You're an English major at heart.
Wait, indeed.
Better than me. Wait,
you're an English major, right?
I was a theater studies major at Yale, which is like Yale doesn't want to be a trade school. So it won't let you major in theater. It's theater studies. You know, they don't want to teach you anything practical.
Oh, interesting.
But that included writing, playwriting and stuff like that, right?
Yes, yes, exactly.
Okay, very cool. Oh my God. Well, we are so excited to have you here, Zoe. We already had a lot of fun chatting with you before we hit record, but I'm excited for our guests to get to know you. Congrats on Doubt and everything that's going on right now.
Thanks. I'm loving doing it. It's like a total joy every day. For very thorny subject matter, I have to say Quincy, Tyler Bernstein, and I were saying how happy we are to go to work every day.
Oh my God, that's so fun. I've heard that before when you're in like a darker show. Sometimes you have to balance it with bringing joy into the room. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just sort of a downer of an experience.
It's also, you know, a swift 90 minutes with no intermission. So I gotta say, I love that. You get on the train and you don't get off until you're done and then you go home.
Yeah, totally. As an audience member, we love that too, you know?
Indeed.
Yeah. I have so many questions about what drew you to the project and what it's like doing the show every night. But before we do that, I want to ask, are you well?
I mean, the temptation to say I am deeply unwell, you know, it's biting at my heels, but I have to say I'm very well. I'm very happy to be doing this show. It's my first time in a play in 7 years. So it feels like, what can I say except I'm deeply well?
I'm deeply unwell.
This is your return to Broadway. And I know that you kind of cut your teeth acting in New York. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're returning to Broadway, it's in this production, is really exciting. And also the first major revival of Doubt too, which is thrilling.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, the last play I did was this play at the Roundabout off Broadway, also with Amy Ryan. So now I'm saying to her, like, in another 7 years, what do you want to do? Like, name the play now. I'll see you there.
Oh, my gosh. That's funny. So how did Doubt come into your world, this specific production?
I think I'm kind of telling on myself here, but I don't read a lot of like entertainment news because it stresses me out. And so I really only get it in like drips and drabs of like what I see at, you know, when I'm scrolling the New York Times app. And I saw the news about the Doubt revival with Lee Evans-Hine. And I immediately texted my agent and was like, if they're seeing people for Sister James, like I'm not seeing any casting news for it. Like if they're seeing people, will you find out if they'll see me? And then like 2 weeks later, they came back and they were like, they're just offering it to you. And then I completely freaked out because, you know, at the time I had like a 6-month-old baby and a 4-year-old. And I was like, I don't know how I would possibly do this. Like, how could I miss bedtime 5 nights a week, like, and be gone all weekend? And I spent like about 3 weeks like trying to figure out like what we could afford in terms of childcare and like, could my mom come help out? And And once I worked it all out, I said yes. So it was kind of like some little like gremlin voice deep inside my like the well of my soul was like, we must do this. And I was like, okay, fine, I'll figure it out.
Yeah, I read in your bio that your last line is thanking the people who are helping take care of your children during this time. That's really beautiful.
Well, I would not be able to do this if it weren't for like a true village of people who are helping out. So.
Were you a fan of the play before or the movie?
You know what's so weird is that I never saw a production of it, and I don't remember seeing the movie. I think I read it like around the time that, you know, I think I was in school when the first production was out, and I think I read it around that time. But I just had this like overwhelming feeling of like that's exactly the material I need to be working on. And then when I reread the play, I felt like, wow, it could have been written this year. Like the play feels so, it seems like it's so specifically speaking to the time that we're in. And I don't know, there was something so fresh about it to me. In a weird way, I'm glad that I'm not carrying the baggage of like the other great actors who've come before me in this show, because I think that would be really daunting.
Yeah. For sure. I had that experience watching it. I'd never seen the play before. I saw the film years and years ago, but it really, for better or worse, felt timeless in a way that I was like, ooh, this hits like it could have just debuted, you know?
Yeah, I think that's really how we're treating it too. Like in the same way that I think you can treat like a Shakespeare play or a Chekhov play, like a almost like a new piece of text. Like there's something in this play that stands outside of time.
Yes. Yes.
As you say, for better or worse.
Right.
I need to see it. Connor called me after he went. Was it Wednesday you went?
Yeah. The rainy night.
I was just raving. Oh my God. And I mean, you're obviously working with some incredible players in this production. There's been a little bit of a casting shift and whatnot. So you've now played opposite three different incredible actresses. Is it Sister Aloysius?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. Did grow up Catholic, also for better or worse.
I know. Well, that stuff connected with me too. I was like, oh, this is familiar. Like we had, you know, former sisters of the church in our family growing up, mm-hmm. and it was giving Sister Aloysius at times. I really, again, connected to it.
Yeah, one of our great aunts was a nun, but she had left
the sisterhood.
And so, and Connor said, yeah, it was really giving our Aunt Eileen, who went as Sister Daniel was her name.
Wow.
So what was it like now working with three different actresses as Sister Aloysius?
It's been a really unexpected journey. You know, our wonderful Tyne Daly had to drop out the first day of our previews. So we canceled that preview and then did essentially a put-in rehearsal with her understudy, Isabel Keating, who is like a Broadway legend in her own right. Like I remember when she was cast thinking like, okay, we have a Tony nominee as our understudy. So like, gotta step up my game. Thank God for Isabel. Like she had only been on the production like a matter of days. She hadn't had a rehearsal. She hadn't had a costume fitting. And she knew all of her lines. And we did like, you know, we rehearsed on Friday and we rehearsed Saturday during the day. And Saturday night, Isabel went on. And she went on for a full like week and a half of performance. So Tyne dropped out Friday. Isabel was on stage Saturday. And then Sunday night, Amy Ryan agreed to step in. And so we started rehearsal with Amy during the day on Tuesday while we were performing with Isabel at night through that week. And a week later on Tuesday, Amy went on. So it was like a really, like I said, a really unexpected moment in the theater. And I have to say, it was so inspiring to me. Like Isabel's courage, Amy's courage, everybody's just like deep love of the game, getting in there and being like, I accept that this isn't going to be perfect. I accept that like the lack of control here. Let's just like fling ourselves at the feet of the theater gods and see what happens. It really like galvanized us as a company. It made it impossible to have a bad attitude about anything. Like, you know, it's just been like a weirdly joyful experience. I mean, I'm sending so much love to Tyne, and I wish everyone could have seen her sister Aloysius. But it has also been like weirdly inspiring and wonderful to have this completely strange process. And now we're open, you know, like, and here we are, and we're just sailing along, like, as if it was always Amy from the start.
Yeah, the silver linings are really cool that you're able to find all of that too. And I mean, Amy is such a talent. Like, it doesn't surprise me at all that she was the one who stepped in. Like, so brilliant.
No, me neither. No, Amy is the most gracious, kind, spitfire of a person. I admire her from the bottom of my soul. And I'm so thrilled to be working with her again. And she's also like a magician. Like, you know, I had this experience on the last play we did together, this play Love, Love, Love at the Roundabout off Broadway 7 years ago. We were in rehearsal and we were just like going along. And then one day in rehearsal, I like looked over and was like, oh, she's a different person. Like some transformation has just happened. And the same thing happened on this with almost no process. Like maybe day four of her being on stage, I like walked onto stage in the first scene and looked at her and was like, oh, I don't know that person. That's a completely different person than the person I warmed up with. And that's so exciting. Like she has that chameleon ability that it's like ineffable. I have no idea how she does it.
Wow. Yeah. And Scott Ellis directed this, and he's obviously, you know, stepped in as the artistic director of Roundabout and everything. I've heard that he does have a really joyful rehearsal room and process. Oh,
he really does. I love Scott. He's just easy breezy. I can't speak well enough of him.
Yeah. Did he direct Love, 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 though? Did he?
No, that was Michael Mayer. Yeah. Oh, wow. Who is also just a love of all loves.
And both guys are like titans of the musical theater world directing as well. So that's
yeah,
really cool.
Totally. I've worked with a lot, you know, Michael Greif, like I've worked with a lot of musical theater or primarily musical theater directors too. And I love it. Maybe it's because they're so used to having to deal with like dancing and orchestras and stuff like that too, that like just doing a straight play is like, you know, no problem.
Yeah, exactly. I've also got to say Liev was perfectly cast in this role. The charisma that he has, it just mwah, beautiful. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he's been a dream to work with. Honestly, we've, you know, for as troubled as this production has maybe seemed on the outside, it's been really joyful and loving on the inside. I love working with Liev and Quincy. They're both, everybody's really like, it's a thrill to be on stage with everybody. And I think Liev's really inspiring to me in his process. Like he's a very dogged actor. He's like really pursues the truth of the text in a kind of like unflinching way where he just keeps coming at it and coming at it and coming at it. Like, it's not that he's insatiable. It's that like, he knows that there's a better way. Like he's always pursuing that. It's like a kind of like really intense curiosity. And I love that.
Oh. I think the word truth really stood out to me there. And it reminded me of something that I had read years ago, because I'm obsessed with like best play winners, best musical winners, things like that. And obviously Doubt won the Pulitzer and best play back in its original run. And I had read that John Patrick Shanley, the writer, had only told the actor playing Father Flynn whether it was true, what he did or didn't do. And no one else knows. It's just between the writer and that actor. But I'm curious about your opinion of the truth. I don't know if it's something you'd rather stay away from and just sort of let the audience decide. Do you have a strong inkling one way or another of... Do you have doubt?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think on our production, John didn't give anybody his opinion on that. No, I know what Liev thinks, and I know that we are not all supposed to be on the same page about it. I think for me, you know, with my character, Sister James, she really goes back and forth. You know, she's really in some ways a stand-in for the audience. And so I think what was more potent for me than like whether or not it's like whether or not this fictional character did it is sort of beside the point, since we know what actually went down in the Catholic Church.
Very true. Very true.
We all saw Spotlight. Okay.
Yep. Yep. Which Liev was also great in.
Yeah.
But I think for me, it's more about the fact that like anything could be true and that other people are unknowable, and that like, what are the limits of empathy, and is there something good about having a limit to your empathy, and you know, how are people protected by institutions and institutional power, and how are people jeopardized by institutions and institutional power, and who is protected and who is jeopardized? Like, there's big questions at the heart of the play that have nothing to do with like guilt or innocence.
Mm. Yeah. Ooh, you gave me chills. I love that.
Very well said. It kind of reminds me a little bit of She Said in the way you're speaking about it, which we will get to. We're obsessed with She Said. Well, yeah. Maybe we should talk about it now.
That's nice.
But congrats on that film. Loved it so much.
Mm. Oh, thanks.
You and Carrie together, fabulous. I mean, just what a great duo.
She's a dream girl.
How did you and Carrie meet?
We met on The Seagull in 2008.
Okay.
Yeah, Ian Rickson's production that transferred from the Royal Court. That's when we met, and we shared a dressing room, and we kind of fell in love.
Wow. I remember actually this hidden memory of mine just came back. When I was doing social media in New York for a long time, I worked on the production of Girls and Boys that she did. And I actually remember spying you across the way. I think it was opening night. And I remember being like, oh my God, I think you smiled at me in the line to get into the theater.
Oh, that's so nice. She was so amazing in that. Yeah.
Oh my God. Another 90-ish minutes straight through, talk about getting on the train.
Yeah, another really light subject matter.
She's drawn to that, definitely. You both, yeah.
That's right.
But I think that material, you know, it takes like really strong, thoughtful performers to be able to handle it. And I think that that's why the two of you were so perfect in She Said, because again, audience surrogates in some ways, like we were very much brought in. You both felt like real people. And obviously you were playing real people. And it was a really, really cool look into that whole process. When you look back on She Said, how do you remember that whole experience?
You know, that was actually a really hard shoot for me. I think it was really hard to go to work every day and deal with that subject matter. You know, with doubt, there's so much emphasis on protecting this child and about this, like, there's so many things I can think about, like how to be a good teacher and how to hold kindness for your fellow man without being naive. Like there's so many things that I feel are full of joy and curiosity and interest to me. Like the real story of Harvey Weinstein and what he did is so dark. And, you know, I found pockets of joy in it. Like Carrie and I had a really good time together, and, you know, we kind of like eschewed one of our, like, we were sharing like a trailer divided in half, and we like eschewed one half of the trailer, and like we basically shared a dressing room again so that we could be together. And that was really fun. And we made it fun for each other. And there were, like, to work with Jennifer Ely and Samantha Morton, like there are people that I like have admired for as long as I can remember, but I wouldn't want to do it again. Yeah. It was hard.
Yeah. I can imagine. You know, I don't know how online you are, quote unquote. There's a clip of Carrie and She Said that is memed all the time. I don't know if
you know. Oh, I didn't know about that.
Well, you know, she's got that great deep American accent. Like her tone is deeper. Uh-huh. There's this clip of her. I don't remember if it's you approaching her with some, you know, some break in the story or something. But she's looking at the camera, leaning against the wall, and she goes, "What exactly are we looking at here?" And people, that's the line. And people use it now all the time. Whenever there's something
bizarre that happens in the news.
Bizarre.
Yeah. That's funny.
Oh, it's fantastic. God. I love her. My other
dream to be mean.
I know, in a positive way too, you know?
Yeah. The other thing I loved and She Said was the Gwyneth Paltrow stuff with, you know, she's just on the phone call, but the scene when you go up to her house and then it like cuts and you're leaving. That was camp to me, but in a good way. In like, because we didn't need to see it. You know what I mean? Like it's
yeah.
We understood, and the phone call was enough, but I just loved that bit of it. Just had to say.
Yeah. I also loved that. I had this image in my head though of like Gwyneth seeing the house that was standing in for her house and being like, I would never.
That would be so right. Exactly. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that movie was great.
Yeah, well, congrats to you on that one. We have loved so many of your different projects over the years. I would like to kind of go back, and we talked a little bit about your college experience and whatnot, but we do like to visit our guests' Ring of Keys moment. I don't know if you're familiar with the musical Fun Home, but there's a song.
Oh, am I?
Oh, I love that.
Did I see it multiple times? I did. Did I bring my mother and cry all the way through while I held her hand?
Mm-hmm. Wait, I love to hear that so much. And your mom, is she still in LA? Do they still live out on the West Coast?
They do. They were here until like a couple days ago helping out through like the preview period because I was gone like, you know, from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. every day. And they really like filled in with my kids, which was pretty great. Yeah, my parents both.
Do they call them grandma and grandpa?
No, they call them Mimi and Papu. Papu is like the Greek word for grandfather. And Mimi was what one of my mom's best friends went by. So she was like, I'll adopt that.
I love that. I love like non-traditional names for grandparents. That's really fun.
Yeah.
So cute.
Okay. So being raised, you know, out West and everything, do you feel like you had a ring of peace moment where you realized a life in the arts was one for you and that this was your passion?
Yeah, I do. I mean, you know, in some weird way, I feel like I cannot remember not wanting to be a writer or not thinking of myself as a writer. Like when I was really little, we have all of these like stories that I wrote with stickers, like where I would like arrange stickers in a certain order and then have my mom write down the story that I was trying to tell with the stickers, like before I could even really, you know, write or draw a coherent picture. So I always wrote and I always thought of myself like that. And my parents are both writers. So I think that was pretty natural, but they were definitely not trying to raise an actor. And then like weirdly, actually my ring of keys moment, I think is like with Tyne Daly, my mom took me to see Gypsy on Broadway when she did it in, I think it's 1989. I think I was like 5 or 6. And I think my mom thought like, I'll take her to the first act, which is like mostly about children. And then we'll just like skip the second act. And I refused to leave apparently. And then we sat through the second act. And then after it was over, I was like stars in my eyes. Like, that's what I want to do when I grow up. And my mom claimed that she thought that I meant stripping and was like, it's not as glamorous as it appears. Like,
the hard life, honey.
But no, I didn't mean stripping. Although I've had to get my kid off plenty of times on stage. That's true. You know, there's that. And then, you know, like, I remember like watching The Godfather with my parents as a teenager and like seeing John Cazale for the first time, or like watching like Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore and seeing Ellen Burstyn's performance in that. Like then like in New York, like I went to school outside of New York, and so I would come in and see plays, and like I remember seeing Philip Seymour Hoffman in Long Day's Journey Into Night, and like had never seen anything like that before. Seeing Ben Schenkman in Sight Unseen, the Donald Margulies play that was at MTC. Yeah. And that, like, I saw that, I think Donald Margulies was my playwriting teacher at the time, and he got comps and he knew like how much I loved that production. So he got me in like 3 times to see that play. And like, just, I don't know, like there are these like little stars in the firmament where, or like there's this actress called Mojan Marneau who was at Yale Drama when I was undergrad. And I remember seeing her in Orpheus Descending. She played Carol Cotrer, who's like this sort of like floozy character. And I thought she was just brilliant. And I went up to her afterwards and was like, where did you study acting? And then I went and studied with those teachers. It just like these sort of feelings, like almost like in a, what are those machines called where you put the ball, a pinball machine, like a pinball machine where you're like, have little paddles like keeping you on track. Like, I kind of like feel like, oh, you need, feel like I needed a lot of keys on my ring of keys to keep me going.
Wow.
That's so cool. I love that you're able to kind of track it, you know, when you look back on everything and the Tyne connection.
Yeah. I know. And
you told her?
Yeah, I got to tell her that, which was really special.
Oh, it was all worth it then, right? and obviously the writer storyline was very much continued to be a part of your life as well while you're also performing. I actually own We Live Here.
Oh wow, that's so nice.
I bought it a couple years ago and it is, I mean, aww, I literally pulled it out. I was like, nice. I need to reread it again because it is so good and powerful. Was it harder to get your foot in as a writer or as an actor?
Oh, interesting.
Oh gosh. You know, I don't know. They've been really different. You know, I think that the thing that's like really quite difficult about life in the arts is that there is no like career path. Like there's no apprenticeship that leads you to the next step that leads you to the next step. And maybe that's just life. But I think in some other cultures, there's more, like, I know that in Korean culture, for instance, like in the Korean film industry, like there's a very clear path. If you want to become a director, you do this job and then this job and this job. Like, and we don't really have that here. So I feel like I got lucky in a lot of ways. And I also, you know, kept doing what I wanted to do, even when things weren't going well. You know, like, mm-hmm. I know that, like, my first play I wrote in college, and then I was like out of school and acting, but like, you know, as a young actor doing tons and tons of auditioning and getting like one job for every, I don't know, 100 jobs you audition for or something, just like, you know, the ratio is kind of daunting and you have all this free time. And like, you know, I felt like I was going to go insane, just putting all of my creativity in this bucket that felt like it had a hole in it. And so I went back to that play as a kind of like lifeline for myself. Like, well, I don't want to like go crazy, so let's do something that is within my control, that's creative. And then I applied for the Humana Festival with that play, and they rejected it. And but they were like, keep working on this and bring it back to us. And so I did, and I like solicited a lot of notes, and I kept working on it, and I applied again the next year, and they accepted it. And then, you know, that production went pretty well, and I got a commission at MTC, which is what we live here was. And that production was really, mm-hmm. really hard. And like, through no fault of any of my collaborators, but it was a really big learning experience for me in terms of things not turning out the way that I wanted. And I don't just mean in critical reception. I mean, I also like really lost the thread of like the story that I was trying to tell. And when I went back to have the published version of it, I did a lot of rewriting, because to sort of like reinstate things that I had cut and figure out how to get back to my original impulse. Like, and then I took a lot of like learning from that and brought it to the next play I did, where I felt like, I want to write a play that I don't have to rely on any producer to do. Like, I want to write a play that I could do in a basement mm-hmm. somewhere, like that I could produce for no money, because I had felt so beholden to MTC and to take certain notes from them in order to like get that play produced. And, you know, and then from that, you know, that taught me something that I took into the next thing. So I don't know, they just feel, I will say, just like with writing, I feel like it's always been something that I've felt more like, no one can take it away from me. Like, even if no one will publish my work or produce my work, I can still go home and write. And with acting, like, you really can't do it unless someone gives you a job. And that's always been something I've struggled with, especially because, like, you know, there's a part of me that's such an A student that always wants to please teacher. And, you know, I don't think that that's not like the healthiest part of myself to give the keys to the kingdom. Like, I want to feel that I have a relationship with my creativity that it is not in someone else's hands.
Mm. Sure. Thank you for explaining all that. I think that's really, really interesting, because we don't get the chance to talk to a lot of writers. And I think sometimes people think you present it like the work is done, and then it just is the actors take it away and the directors take it away. But the idea that it's a constant process is, I think, kind of inspiring, but also, I don't know, maybe a little nerve wracking.
Well, like Tony Kushner famously like still rewrites Angels in America for every production. And like, you know, that's probably one of the greatest plays in the English language. So if he can keep doing that, certainly we can.
Yeah. I actually have an Angels tattoo. I have more life. The last line right here.
Oh my God. I mean, I'm really telling secrets on myself now. I always say Harper's last speech to myself as the plane, when I get on an airplane, as the plane is taking off, I say it to myself. And then as the plane is landing, I say it to myself. And it's like, I don't have a religious upbringing, and I don't practice any religions, but that is like the closest that I come to having a prayer.
That's iconic.
I love that. And you were Harper in that signature production.
I was. And honestly, like, it's one of the great loves of my life, that play.
Yeah.
And the truth is that, like, I played that role at like 26, 27. And now I'm like, I would be able to play that part much better now.
Hey, it's never too late.
40 years of life experience. It might be too late. I don't think anyone's going to let me do that anytime soon. But in my head, I can.
You've got the monologue ready.
There you go.
Well, How old is Harper supposed to be?
I think she's supposed to be in her 30s, but it's more that, like, you know, there was just a revival or whatever.
Yeah, there was.
True. That's true.
Gosh, we were at the closing performance of the revival, the second of Perestroika, and the audience went so nuts during Harper's speech at the end. She kind of like raises her arms in the air at the end or something. It was so triumphant and beautiful. I understood the character in a cool way that time that I never really had before.
That's so neat. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious, you were talking about writing, and I had heard that you were adapting East of Eden into a miniseries, right?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
That's still, that you're still working on it.
Well, sort of. I've actually written the whole thing, basically. It's 8 parts, and it's basically done. We're sort of in the process of putting it together with, like, cast and director and stuff like that right now. But yeah, I got... I got that job, like, basically exactly as the world shut down with COVID in March of 2020. And I'm still, like, chugging on it. It takes, someone told me, maybe it was Tyne, actually, that the gestation period of any project in Hollywood is 7 years. So, you know, I'm 4 years in.
There you go. All right. Well, but that's kind of funny. 7 years. And also every 7 years you work with Amy Ryan. So there's definitely truth to that.
There you
there's
go.
Definitely truth.
Maybe Amy will be in it.
Maybe there's the part she'd be perfect for. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Is Miss Flo, Florence Pugh, still attached?
Yes, she is.
Oh, so cool. So cool.
I know. She's my dream casting. We'll see if it actually happens. But she's, when I went in and pitched on the project, they were like, oh, do you have any, like, actors in mind? And I was like, I have one. One person. Because in the book, that character of Kathy plays from, like, 19 to 36. And I really would love to get someone who feels kind of age appropriate for that.
Yeah, definitely.
For
and
sure.
She's just brilliant.
I love that it's 8 parts.
Yeah. Well, it's a huge book. It's like a 600-page book that spans from the Civil War to the First World War. So, you know, you can't do it. You could do a part of it the way that the movie did. The movie took, like, the last 150, 200 pages of the book. But if you're going to do the whole thing, you kind of have to, like, get in there and sprawl around.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this. I'm excited that you're a part of it. I like there's the whole family connection too. I think that's really, really special. And
I know, I have to say, the way your grandfather shot that film, stunning. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, it looks so good.
You know, what's funny is that I don't really have a really strong relationship with that movie. Like, I was a Steinbeck nerd as a kid. I read, like, Grapes of Wrath in 8th grade or something. And I went, like, whoa, this is for me. And then read, like, I kind of, like, became, like, a Steinbeck completist. And so I read East of Eden at, like, 14, maybe, and just completely fell in love with it. And then when I watched the movie, I was really disappointed because it was nothing like the book and was like, oh, okay, well. But mostly it's because that character, Kathy, is so different in the movie than she is in the book.
Okay.
Now I can see, like, the beauty of the film for what it is, but, like, as a snobby 15-year-old, I was like, it's not the book. You know.
The book was better, you know.
Exactly.
Was your grandfather still alive at the time so you could air your grievances?
Yeah, I didn't talk to him about it, though. You know, you got to protect people's ego.
Oh, absolutely.
Just Papu, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's my Papu.
Aw.
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Do you think you and Paul would ever do a stage show together?
Oh, God, I really, you know, I was about to say, I really don't think so, but we did. It would be really hard. I don't know how we would do it with our children.
Yeah,
that's true. But we read a couple scenes from House of Blue Leaves for this John Guare evening at the 92nd Street Y last winter that Tony Kushner arranged. And I told Tony, like, if you ever want to direct House of Blue Leaves, like, we want to do it. So, you know, I'm still putting that into the universe. We're not too old for those parts yet.
Yes. And you know that you have a village that'll help if it's necessary. So.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, oh my God, Zoe, you're so sweet. You're so insightful. I've absolutely loved this convo. We're sadly wrapping up.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, of course. Oh my God. Honestly, we're gagged in the moment. We do like to end with a dose of drama. This is a little something to leave the listeners with. Could be a pop culture recommendation, a rant, a rave, anything on our minds as we send our listeners out into the world. Dylan, do you have a dose of drama today?
I do. I just got it yesterday. I just started reading RuPaul Charles's first memoir, first part of his memoir. It's called The House of Hidden Meanings.
Wait, this is Rue's first memoir? I thought Rue had like a million books.
Rue has written a lot of like self, I don't want to call them self-help books, but they're like, there's like a book of like life theories and advice called Guru. And there's one called like Let It and All Hang Out, like sort of more silly or advice driven books. But this is actually like more narrative. And It's the first 40 years of Rue's fascinating, fascinating life. And I'm obviously a huge Drag Race fan and love, I love like the platitudes that Rue kind of puts out that we all just, and Rue has always been this way. It is just so interesting. I can't get enough. And I hope there's going to be a second part at some point because it only goes up until, like I said, when Rue was 40.
Oh.
And I highly recommend it as my dose of drama. If anyone wants to understand the icon a little better, I think that it's definitely worth getting. Zoe, are you a Rue person at all?
I mean, who is not? There's a person who lives in our neighborhood who has an Instagram account where she dresses her cat up in drag. She like, it's like a cat drag race thing. And she's written a book that her cat is like the star of. Anyway, she gave it to us and my children are obsessed with it. And we do a lot of reading of this, cat and squirrel and their experience of drag. Yes. No, who is not a Rue fan?
Right. I know. That's so funny. Yeah.
I love that. I need to read it. Okay.
Connor, what about you?
Well, I've talked about this on the podcast so much, but The Traitors season 2 wrapped up last night, the finale, the Peacock competition show. And it was an amazing season of television. Everybody has to go watch it. I don't want to spoil how it ended, but I do have very complicated feelings about the way it was handled in the end. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but if the Faithfuls and the Traitors are supposed to be these united two groups, I feel very split on how the victory was achieved in the end. And I'll just say that. Wow. I'm feeling dramatic about it. I feel like it went against the antithesis of the show itself. So, but anyway.
Are you have you seen The Traitors, Zoe?
I've seen the first season. I haven't seen The second season.
This season?
I
look forward to it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And now it's all out. So you, no need to wait. Well, I don't know how much free time you have in between.
Well, I just finished Love is Blind, so obviously there's an opening in my schedule.
I've seen a lot of clips of this recent season on TikTok, and it seems like it was very dramatic.
That Love is Blind?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, yeah. I mean, I've been watching it like in between shows on my laptop.
It seems like a lot of people go onto that show for the wrong reasons, and that they already have like relationships outside of it and stuff. Like it just doesn't seem like the casting's right.
I mean, honestly, the true reason to go on any reality show now is for exposure so that you can become an influencer, right? Like
exactly.
So I don't even think we can call them the wrong reasons anymore. We all know what the deal
there's is. There's one reason. That's funny. Is Love is Blind your dose of drama, or do you have anything else you'd like to?
No, my dose of drama is this book, Splinters by Leslie Jameson, which I'm reading, and it's so good. And it's this beautiful memoir that she wrote about becoming a mother and her own mother and about divorcing from her child's father. And it's just really gorgeous. And it's also a little bit of an uncanny experience for me because she's like my age exactly. Our daughters were born at the same time. She grew up in Los Angeles like I did. She went to like an East Coast Ivy school. Like there's just so much weird overlap. And now she lives in Brooklyn. And I'm like, well, I'm going to be interviewing her in June. And I'm a little bit like, I wonder whether this is going to be like, look, like that Spider-Man meme where they're all pointing at each other.
Maybe a little bit. That's really cool. That's so fun. I'm not familiar with her.
Oh, she's such a beautiful writer. And I actually bought my mom a copy of this book too, so that we could read it at the same time.
So special. I'm definitely going to read it. What outlet are you interviewing through in June?
I'm interviewing her like at a book event at McNally Jackson.
Oh, very nice. Oh, well, so exciting.
Zoe, this has been really, really a treat for Connor and I. So thank you for doing our show.
Thank you. I'm so honored that you wanted to talk to me.
Yes. Aww. Now, you're not really on social media, but you do have places people can find you online, right?
I do. I have a Twitter handle, an X handle. I don't know what we're saying these days.
We still call it Twitter. Yeah.
Great. I have a Twitter handle. It's Zoe in the Cities. and I have an Instagram handle, zoe.kazan, but I honestly, I got a new phone a year ago and I never reinstalled Instagram on my phone, and it's actually, my life is like better. So I don't know, you know, it's a real, do I go on there for self-promotion and to, you know, buy overalls at 3 a.m. or do I not?
I think it's
a constant struggle.
I know, it's such a struggle. Well, I'll figure out a way to send you the meme of Carrie and She Said. And
oh, send it to me on Twitter.
On Twitter, okay. And everybody needs to go see Doubt. And thank you again for joining us. Well, everybody is following you on socials. They've got to follow us at The Drama Podcast. Dylan's at Dylan McDowell and I'm at Connor McDowell.
Thank you again, Zoe.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And Connor, I will see you next time. Drama.